relationship. And I will ask you, Beth, we have 15 minutes again. Would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal on that case?
Yes, please.
Okay, how long would you like?
I like 3-4 minutes.
3 minutes, sure. Yeah. Okay, so let me get you, if you would segue into your argument on that case, and we're going to hear.
Yes, ma'am, I will do that. I believe actually both these cases are about equal access. It's about whether the child has equal access to due process or whether the child has equal access to the educational system. And in the Schroeder case, the hearing officer just perfunctorily dismissed the case after a motion to dismiss was provided to her the night before the hearing. And the parents had all their witnesses lined up and everything. And I believe that when the circuit court upheld her decision, they violated ABA, or I guess I should say she, for the honorable judge, she violated ABAC 20-81-2010-T2 by failing to receive the record, hearing additional evidence, basing her decision not on the preponderance of the evidence and granting relief that she would deem appropriate. In fact, at one point, the judge actually said there was nothing she could do. She didn't have the authority, and she knew nothing about IEPs, and she couldn't order anything. The judge allowed in the appellee's last-minute additional evidence while denying the appellant the equal right to that. And this failure to hear additional evidence is especially grievous when it is so one-sided and where the hearing officer has failed to allow the parents to put on evidence. If we had been able to put on evidence at the lower level, the judge could say, well, I've seen most of your evidence. But since there was no evidence, since the school board failed to forward the record even to the circuit court, basically the judge took the school board's word for it. She also failed to comply with Rule 2A54, which requires that she use the administrative record as the basis for her decision. And she helped the LEA, the school board, circumvent ABAC 20-81-210-15, which requires that it furnish the record. This right to the record is so strong that the IDEA speaks of parents having the right, even after the appeals period has passed, they have the right to the record. She failed to compel the circuit court clerk to exercise her duties under Rule 513 to transfer the record. And she found that the parent yes meant no, which I think is clear error and is in opposition to the reasonable man standard, which is alive many other places, but and I hope it's alive in the Virginia Court of Appeals.
I think I read this in this record at some point. During the pendency of this appeal, did you actually consent to an initial education plan?
Actually, at this point, I have signed 2 IEPs, and I have also signed an eligibility paper
Were those signed consents included in this record?
No, sir, because the school board doesn't accept my signed consent. I would have to go into our negotiations to explain that.
And I would. Your letter is just to what's in there.
Yes, sir. The school board or the circuit court judge also added an additional or supported Ms. Schroeder's addition of a requirement to the IDEA that one item has to be appealed before another item. And that's actually not been the way that the IDEA has been viewed up to this point. Parents have been free to appeal any part that they disagree with, they feel is in violation. And I think if that comports comports with the whole idea of the statute, which is to limit discrimination. So if there's no one to keep the school board accountable, then we have situations which are quite horrendous, like this case. She allowed a plea and bar without regard to the record and basically to function as a motion for summary judgment. She also disregarded the weight of the evidence. Parents had brought forward a whole lot of evidence. And there are two eligibility consent forms that were included during her during the oral argument before her, which show that even if the parent says, "I consent to special education services," on the form signs that is not enough to consent to special education services. The judge ignored ABAC 20-81-210 and section 22.1-214 of the code, and various other provisions which list parental rights to due process regarding eligibility, IEPs, FAPE, financial reimbursement without regard to hierarchy or time order. So parents are able to get financial reimbursement without having any IEP or anything, but a child is not able, apparently, to get a due process appeal. She took away the parents' right to equal participation in free speech as provided by VAC 20-81-80D7, which provides for IEP team consensus. That is, parents are supposed to be part of a team, and if members of that team disagree about something, they are allowed to voice that disagreement. And this parent was not allowed to. In fact, in a subsequent eligibility meeting, the parent wrote something on the form, and the school board actually threw away that piece of paper, brought her a new piece of paper, and said she had to write somewhere else. In addition, the judge ratified the Stafford County's eligibility form, which fails to comply with the IDEA. And it's very clever to say you have to agree, because when parent can appeal the eligibility that they've signed that they agree with, right? When parent can do that, whereas a parent can, you'd have to say, "Well, I didn't agree, but I signed agree." That's not going to work. And I think that's why the Congress and our local lawmakers decided that consent is what you need. I know that the school board has formulated a different main question for appeal than I have. My question is whether a parent the lower level, in the circuit court, the parents argued that the IDEA does not require a parent to challenge the eligibility before challenging the IEP. And I don't see any provisions in the law as to that, and I asked counsel to bring them out. And they also argued the IDEA provides parents with the right to challenge any violation of the IDEA at any time under 81210. And the circuit court's reading of the statute is sure to increase litigation, because whereas parents before would have said, "It's okay as long as we get a good IEP," now parents will have to litigate at every single level. And I think that's unfortunate, and I don't believe that is a correct reading of the law. Finally, there are additional things that were a concern. There were comments by the court that were, of a concern. And of course, there was a lot of evidence that the hearing officer did not judiciously or faithfully execute her office. She refused to let the parents have equal access to her. I could not even deliver my exhibit book. I had to find an approximate place where she was, and she was in a huge office building, and then I had to send a child up to find somebody who was willing to take the exhibit book and who knew her, because she refused to take our phone calls. There was times when I asked for clarification whether she had received my emails or faxes, but she would not respond. And she actually at one point said she would not take any more faxes or emails from us. I think that doesn't demonstrate a disinterested HO, hearing officer. And I think that alone really should require that the judge send it back to somebody else. The school board has violated the Virginia Code in various ways, including failing to provide parents with the kind of consent form that they are entitled to. And it's telling that this summer the school board did offer a form that was revised and says consent on it, and the parent was able to sign that, of course, immediately. I think I'd like to reserve the
certainly. We'll look at that about 3.5 minutes. And we are once again ready to hear from
Your Honor, before I begin my argument, I would like to point out that to the extent that Ms. Val Eisen is claiming that the circuit court judge or the hearing officers were unfair to her, I would submit that the court may read the transcript from the circuit court and the hearing officer, and the record is clear that I think that she was treated professionally and fairly during both proceedings. Perhaps I will start this case by giving Your Honors the background to the case, so in that way maybe the issues are more clear, and if you would just indulge. In the case below, Ms. Val Eisen instituted an action in the Stafford County Circuit Court to challenge a hearings officer's decision that he dismissed. The issue before the hearing officer was whether the proposed October 25th, 2013 IEP was reasonably calculated to provide JV with a free, appropriate public education. The hearing officer, however, did not reach the merits of the case, holding that because Ms. Val Eisen had not granted consent to the initial eligibility determination, the FAPE issue of the IEP was not properly before her. Ms. Val Eisen was not enough.
The fact that this is a de novo review before the circuit court, are we concerned in any way with the decision of the hearing officer? Normally, in an administrative appeal, we would be looking at findings of the administrative agency. Here, however, is a de novo hearing. Isn't that kind of water over the dam?
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, it's a modified de novo standard. Yeah. While some deference is given to the hearing officer, however, through the plea in bar, the circuit court in this case examined independently the assessment of the evidence and did not rely on the hearing officer's decision. If you read the transcript,
as you probably guessed from my leading over from during argument case one, case two, my question is, what didn't she consent to? Because the regs make clear that consent does not equate to agree. I understand she disagreed with certain things and made clear, but as far as any activities, and I believe that's what the reg refers to, she consented to all of the determination activities, didn't she? I mean, was there anything that the school board said, we want to run this test, we want to do this interview, we want to do X, that she did not consent to?
Yes, sir. In fact, she did, Your Honor, because the IDEA requires affirmative written consent. She can't just say, I consented. There has to be something in writing. But she never... So there are three things that she must consent to. The first is agree.
That I agree with the determination. You agree that's not consent.
Correct. And crossing it out and replacing with acknowledged is definitely not consent either.
Would you agree that there was no IEP ever developed in this case?
There was an IEP developed, yeah.
Is that in the record? No, the record's not before us, is it? The administrative record's not before us.
The IEP was developed. But the issue here is this. The Ms. Valheisen is not without remedy, and the hearing officer did provide her with a roadmap. The hearing officer told Ms. Valheisen during the hearing, and in her order, Ms. Valheisen, you cannot challenge the IEP because I don't know how to judge whether or not the IEP is appropriate for JV because you have not agreed to any disability category. So why don't you first challenge the eligibility determination, get that straightened out so we know exactly what her disability categories are, so the school board can then write an IEP that's reflective of what you think her disabilities are. Then, at that time, it may be appropriate to challenge the IEP.
Well, it seems to me that kind of in everything, there's really only one question with two subparts before us. The trial court found that because she did not provide written consent to the eligibility decision, plaintiff is not a child with a disability. And it's two subparts I see in that question. One, is she required consent? And two, is the form she signed a indication of lack of consent? Would that be a fair statement of where we are?
I don't believe so with regard to the second prong, Your Honor, because the IDEA is not written in a way to say there's a lack of consent. There must be an affirmative written consent.
No, we're not talking about the IDEA. No, yeah, I'm not talking about it. That's why I don't like acronyms.
The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. I can refer to that if Your Honor prefer.
But, you know, I'm looking through the regs, and it looks to me like the regs are written in a way that people can disagree. Members of this eligibility assessment team can disagree with the eligibility. And they're allowed to do that.
Yes, Your Honor.
She is a member of that team.
Yes.
And it seems to me that that's what that form evidence is. I disagree with the determination, but I don't see, the form itself doesn't have anything about consent.
Your Honor, traditionally, the school division has treated that form. If you sign it, you check
in. I'm not concerned about what the school board has done traditionally. I'm concerned about what the reg requires the school board to do. And to me, it almost looks like the school board is shortcutting everything by not allowing her to disagree with that determination.
Well, Your Honor, Ms. Valheisen may disagree with it, and her remedy is to challenge the eligibility determination. In this case, before Your Honor, she is not challenging the eligibility decision. She is challenging the IEP.
Is it the school board's position that a parent can, consistent with the reg, consent to, quote, an initial eligibility determination without agreeing with the determination? Because it seems to me, from the record, that's what she was trying to do when she struck out agree and not. She doesn't agree with the conclusion you've reached regarding all the specifics, but she is consenting to the child being in the program and receiving services.
I would say no, Your Honor, because under the regulations, there are 13 enumerated categories of disability. So there is no disability in the air. When the team proposes an eligibility determination, the team will say either the child has autism, or the child is vision impaired, or the child has one of the learning disabilities.
Let's say we agree on six. Let's say the kid meets seven different categories.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the parent agrees with six, but disagrees with the seventh, or thinks that there's an additional category that should. So they don't agree. Mm-hmm. Can they still consent?
They can consent.
And to the extent that they can, how is that not manifested by what she did?
Well, this is what we are, Your Honor. I think procedurally this case is very important because she is not challenging the disability category. She is putting the cart before the horse by challenging the actual IEP. If you want to read, and I highlighted this in the Virginia regulations, and I can give you on the citation.
Along those lines, the circuit court's order refers to a dismissal with prejudice. She can file tomorrow and start this whole process over.
She can file a due process hearing and challenge the disability category.
Why would she want to do that? And this child is 3 years older than she was when this first eligibility assessment was done. Why can't she just come in tomorrow and say, my child has a disability, I want to start from scratch. I want an initial evaluation.
Your Honor, this is not before the court, but I will proffer that the parent has since agreed to a category and signed consent to the eligibility determination. But the case that is here before the court today is about the October 2013.
Does that move the case?
Why are we here?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. I do think it is moved.
That would have been nice to know a half hour ago.
If this whole process is starting today, obviously the assessment has to be redone because the child may or may not have the same level of disabilities she had 3 years ago. If there wasn't an initial education plan developed, it's outdated. They have to be redone every year. So if the school board is not, if we're already going through this process, then I don't see where anybody's an agreed party.
Well, Your Honor, and I will submit to the court that the signing consent, the eligibility determination happened very recently, within the past several weeks, I believe.
What I was asking this case is, what in the world would we do if we agreed with the mother? Would we remand it back to the circuit court? To remand it back to the hearing officer? The hearing officer can't do anything other than look at a lot of stale data. And I was really at a loss of where this would end up in any event.
I do not disagree with Your Honor's very insightful comment.
Well, let me pose this, and I'll ask Ms. Enos when she has an opportunity. Do you have an objection to dismissing this appeal as moot?
I do. We do not. The school board does not have objection to dismiss this appeal as moot.
No, you don't. The Apple school, but the school board have any objection to dismissing this appeal as moot?
The school board does not.
And just so I understand this, it is the school board's current position that the child is appropriately is further along in the process than this case. As far as receiving services, all the consents are in place.
No, Your Honor.
Then tell me where we are.
At this point, the parent has signed consent to the initial eligibility determination. So there is a disability category for JB. The parents, when she was up at the podium, she claims that she signed consent to the two IEPs. Unfortunately, as Your Honor has pointed out, she signed consent to old IEPs that she made changes to. They have been subsequent IEPs that were proposed. Unfortunately, the parents have not signed consent to the newest proposed IEP, which happened last month. So right now, the child is a child with a disability. However, if she were to engage in any kind of disciplinary action, the parents still would not be entitled to an this child would not be entitled to an MDR because she has not consented to the third piece, which is the IEP.
So
that's where we are.
Process hearing request regarding the newest IEP.
Not yet, Your Honor. There was a due process hearing request regarding eligibility, and it was dismissed by the hearing officer because the parent eventually signed consenting to the eligibility decision, and that's why the due process hearing was dismissed.
Well, I've enjoyed learning about these individuals with disability.
The one last thing I would like to highlight, Your Honor, I think this is kind of telling how important consent is under the IDEA. Under the IDEA, the school board can also initial due process hearings against the parent under certain circumstances. For example, if the school board believes that this child needs some kind of evaluation to determine whether the child has a disability, the school board can actually institute a due process hearing and force the parent to agree to the evaluation. However, the school board cannot institute a due process hearing to force the parent to agree to the eligibility determination or for services.
With that in mind, let me go back to a question I posed earlier, and maybe a moot question too. You, early on, I think in the last case, you agreed that the requirement for consent that you're relying on is the requirement in Virginia regs of an initial eligibility determination or a change in categorical identification. And as I pointed out, that consent is not included in the consents required by the federal regs. And the federal regs allow states to require other consent, but by reading them, they say that you cannot deny a child a free and appropriate public education as a result of refusal of any other consents. Is that a fair reading?
It is a fair reading, but I would submit to the court that the Virginia regulations still would not be in violation of federal regulations, and here's why. Under the Virginia regulations, you must consent to the initial provision of special education-related services, and if the parent disagrees with that consent, the parent can challenge that consent in a due process hearing. Unfortunately, in this case, the parent just skipped ahead one step. Before challenging that consent, she skipped ahead and challenged the IEP instead.
You're challenging a determination, not a consent.
Yes, Your Honor, I misspoke. You're absolutely correct.
But the Federal Act does not require any consent for the initial determination.
Correct, Your Honor. That is unique to Virginia regulations.
So if the federal regulations don't require it, and the federal regulations say that any additional consent can't deprive a child of the free and appropriate public education, it seems to me that that's what this Virginia consent, as you understand it, does.
Well, I think the federal regs, you have to read it that the initial provision of special education-related services include both the eligibility determination component and the IEP component. Because when you look at the statute, and I know I am running out of time. When you look at the statute as a whole, in order to develop an IEP, you need to know why you're developing that IEP. Because you have to specifically address the child's disability category. But if
that's true and it's implicit because it's two pieces connecting to make a whole, why do we have the subsection B in Virginia regs at all?
And that's a really good question. And the reason for that, Your Honor, because this is also unique to Virginia, without the consent to the initial provision of to the initial eligibility determination, the school board may, but it's not required, to move forward and develop an IEP to show the parent what programs and services would be offered if the parent consent. So under the federal regs, that piece is not there. But under the Virginia school board can move forward and show, we agree you don't want eligibility. However, if you were to agree, this IEP would look like this, and your child would get these kinds of goals, and this would be the services, and this would be the placement, in order to entice the parent to consent.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Your Honor. So, as we have about 3.5 minutes, and I think we're probably likely to address the issue of prudence.
Yes, Your Honor.
If we could maybe direct a little more. Do you have any opposition to this appeal being dismissed as moot with the understanding that you are now in the process of restarting this whole evaluation and determination of appropriate services?
Your Honor, it would be a terrible injustice to this child if you dismiss this case on the basis of mootness.
Okay, because what can we do? What if we agree with you, what can we do to help the child?
Well, first of all, I believe that you can direct the circuit court to order another due process hearing. There were two judges.
No, all we could do would direct the circuit court to have a hearing to determine whether you had to consent to a 2-year-old or 3-year-old assessment of your child's disabilities.
Actually, Your Honor, the reason it's not moot is that the child may be entitled to remedial services to make up for the services that she didn't get the last 3 years.
So that would be based on an evaluation of her right now, correct? I mean, it seems to me if you were to get everything you could possibly want from us,
yes,
it would be to go back and get to the point in the process where this thing stopped. Now, according to what the school board has told us, is the point where it stopped was you signing the consent, and they viewed that as an implacable barrier that you could not cross. But you have now signed that consent, so all we would be doing is sending it back to the exact same spot that it appears you have gotten to by agreement. If that's all we can, if that's all we can do, then by definition it's moot. If you're in the same position you'd be, if we granted you all the relief that you're entitled to, you're in the same spot.
No, sir, because if you dismiss now for mootness, this parent cannot proceed with their IEP due process. There's a statute of limitations, and the only reason this IEP due process is still alive is because it's been appealed this far. And so if you dismiss it now, the parent starts over, as you're saying, but not with the history and not with the opportunity of getting those services. These parents have been paying thousands of dollars in speech therapy every month for the last 3 years. The parents will totally lose the opportunity to get reimbursement for that. And there's other opportunities. So they lose their bargaining power with the school board. The school board is certainly not going to address the child's needs for speech therapy or for sign language.
Is there evidence in the record of the, I take it you've been spending money out of your own pocket outside the school system for speech therapy services?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Is that in the record any?
It isn't, because the hearing officer did not allow us to present any evidence, and she did that in contravention with two other hearing officers who found that these parents had a right to proceed in a charge to the initial IEP. Mr. Lauren Costanzo and Mr. Robinson both found there was no problem with the parents' eligibility and that they could proceed with the IEP. But Ms. Roeder did not find so. And
Ms. Vanderheiser, your time is up. I'm going to give you a minute to wrap it up if you want to. But
I would like that. I believe this council got a minute and a half more than his time.
We'll go ahead and start that now.
Yes, ma'am. The fact that the school board has now presented a form that says consent rather than agree does not make this matter moot. They are 3 years too late. There's 3 years of services that this parent and this child could have gotten. And since this council was allowed to speak a little to the other case, I would like to say that the letter to Union, Galework, and Fullfrost did not address parents who were faced with a faulty consent form. They were not asked to agree wholeheartedly with everything. I think the bottom line really is here, whether there's still equity in Virginia.
Thank you very much.
Well, we'll come down and greet council, and then we're going to take that.